It was Saturday, July 4th, the busiest weekend of the year at Lake of the Ozarks, where vacationers from across the country arrive in droves to experience this one-of-a-kind lake with its 1,150 miles of shoreline, dozens of waterfront restaurants and pool bars, and countless coves to explore. The forecast called for a chance of rain later in the day, but it was slight, and all morning the skies were clear, the sun was hot, and the Ozarks' humidity cast a haze across the verdant wooded hills, beckoning boaters to the blue-green waters of the lake. By noon, the lake was buzzing with boats. Cruisers, pontoons, wakeboats, and runabouts zipped up and down the main channel, tucking into coves for a swim or an afternoon cove out. The waterfront restaurants were filling up. Marinas were pumping gas as dock attendants scrambled from one boat to the next, and many local venues were gearing up for their fireworks shows as boaters made their plans to land in this or that area to see the beautiful display over the water. July 4th was shaping up to be a great one. Then, at around 12:15 p.m., a weather alert. Severe thunderstorm watch. Some saw it, others didn't, having tucked the phone away to enjoy a screen-free day. Either way, it was just a watch, probably nothing to worry about. An hour later, another alert. Severe thunderstorm warning. And for those boaters who checked the radar, they saw it. An angry red line of storms ripping its way from the west, its sights set on Lake of the Ozarks. Some fired up the engines and made it to cover in time, but when the storm hit at around 2 p.m., many, many boaters were caught totally unawares. Gale force winds that some say reached up to 70 or 80 miles an hour throughout the region battered the area. Canvas sunshades were ripped from the top of pontoons. Boaters who suddenly realized the maelstrom they'd been caught in struggled to navigate their vessels against the violent wind and waves. Blowing rain soaked everything in sight, stinging as it struck bare skin. Shouts and laughter soon turned to screams of terror as captains and passengers realized this storm was more than they had bargained for. Now, instead of trying to make it back to their own dock, some began aiming for any dock they could find in hopes of escaping the danger of the open water. But danger didn't always end at the docks. The storm's violent winds began ripping docks away from their moorings. In one harrowing video, a group of young people on a dock, likely watching the storm with a blend of fascination and fear, suddenly ran screaming towards the dock ramp as they observed that the dock they were standing on was beginning to sway. They sprinted up the ramp, made it safely to shore just as the dock tore away from the shoreline and began swinging towards another one nearby. In another instance, a large commercial dock with more than a dozen slips and many large boats tied up inside was torn away from the shoreline by what seemed to be near hurricane force winds blasting the area. That dock was then caught in the lake's ever-present current, floating downstream toward Bagnell Dam until it was stopped by water patrolmen who dragged it to the shore where it could be secured. In less than an hour, the storm was over, and it left utter mayhem behind it. More than 30,000 homes and businesses without power, houses and power lines and power poles crushed by giant oak limbs or entire trees, debris from anything that had been unsecured before the sudden storm broke across the region, scattered everywhere. Some residents would then go without power for days. Most July 4th festivities were called off. The economic impact to local waterfront venues was undoubtedly in the millions between the damage and the lost revenue. Yet in spite of all that, not a single fatality was attributed to this horrible surprise storm. Incredibly, no reports of capsized boats. And while those who had been caught out on the water when the storm hit might have gone to bed that night without power and water and air conditioning, they at least went to bed that night. They made it home in one piece. And that's nothing short of miraculous, because surprise storms like this don't always end that way. Many in Missouri grimly recall the 2018 duck boat tragedy on Table Rock Lake, where a sudden storm capsized an amphibious tour boat, killing 17 people. Fewer remember a similar tragedy on Lake of the Ozarks many more years ago. But that one's no less worth remembering. It's a dark reminder that nature honors no forecasts and it takes no prisoners. Memorial Day weekend, 1954, the heyday of the lake's golden era of tourism when the main highway to the lake brought visitors across Bagnell Dam and children squealed with delight as they looked out the windows to see the green shores of family vacation land. Driving through the area, vacationers would find arcades and fun houses and mini golf and zany attractions like piano playing chickens and even a caged lion. Thomas and Dorothy Fahey had traveled to Lake of the Ozarks for a newlywed getaway. Married just 2 weeks before, the Chicago couple, Thomas and Dorothy, checked into Lazy Days Resort on May 24th, planning to stay nearly 2 weeks. Their check-in card noted a planned departure date of June 4th. The room rate, $6 a day. The good old days. On the 25th, Thomas and Dorothy sent postcards to their families. Thomas's read, "Hi, Dad. We arrived safely last night about 6:30 p.m. Would have sent telegram, but thought it would scare you. The weather was grand driving. The Lazy Day Resort is fine. We are located right near the lake. Going out for breakfast now. Thanks, Dad, for everything. Love, Tom and Dot." Dorothy jotted a similar note to her family. Both of them added a P.S. The same phrase, "Stick with the socks." Maybe a family mantra, maybe just a reminder not to convert to Cubs fans while they were away. Either way, a glimpse into the ordinary lives that these newlyweds expected to return to after their Lake of the Ozarks newlywed getaway. In the first several decades on the lake, tour boats were one of the most popular attractions. Visitors would climb aboard for a trip along Lake of the Ozarks shores. One infamous tour would swing by a famous island around the 4 mile marker, now well known as Isla del Sol. The condos sit on that island, but in the 1950s, it looked more like a foreboding jungle surrounded by water. That island has carried many names over the years, but for a time it was known as Pirate Island. That's because a local tour boat company was known to have paid a man to stay on that island all day dressed like a pirate. When tour boats passed, he would rush at them, waving his sword and shouting like a crazed buccaneer marooned to the Ozarks forever. Amazing what happened during tourism in the golden age of Lake of the Ozarks. Well, one of those tour boats that brought many passengers along the lake's shores was named Grand Glaze. Built by the Robinson Marine Construction Company of Benton Harbor, Michigan, the wooden-hulled craft was powered by twin inboard 225 horsepower Kermath Seawolf engines. Grand Glaze measured 38 feet in length with seating for 28 passengers and a fairly narrow beam of what's estimated to be about 8 feet or so. The late historian Mike Gillespie wrote this about the Grand Glaze. "There was no public address system, and any attempt by the pilot to describe points of interest was drowned out by the roar of those 678 cubic inch engines. You see, these weren't dinner and dance cruises, but rather wide open, full bore, hang on to your hat, Nelly sprints at 25 miles per hour, an almost distressing speed for that day. The object was to make big waves, get close to things such as docks, shoreline, and Bagnell Dam, and in general, scare the dickens out of passengers and observers alike." In the 1930s, the boat and its slightly larger sister, Tuscumbia, were operated by Union Electric, the power company that had recently built Bagnell Dam. But by the late 1940s, both boats had been sold to Lockwood, a concessionaire who operated near the dam. On Friday, May 28th, under sunny skies, the Grand Glaze's young captain, Perry Graham, prepared for another tour of the lake. He was around 18 years old and one of the youngest certified captains on Lake of the Ozarks. For him, just another day of a summer job on a busy holiday weekend, but it would be a day he would remember for the rest of his life. At least 12 passengers climbed aboard the boat. That number is still disputed, and we'll get to the reason in a moment. Passengers made their way to the boat's leather cushions and settled in for what was planned to be a 5 mile cruise. But the boat would never complete that voyage. About 4 miles in, the weather suddenly turned. The storm was on us before I knew it, Perry Graham would later tell the Blyville Courier News. Violent winds battered the boat. Passengers who had boarded in unremarkable weather suddenly found themselves exposed on the open water amid a rapidly developing storm. Meteorologists would later confirm a tornado touched down not far from the lake during that day's storm. It may have even been a tornado that struck the Grand Glaze, or it may have simply been the characteristic high winds and waves that accompany this kind of Missouri weather. Either way, the lake's blue-green waters that had been placid when Grand Glaze launched from the Lockwood docks had now turned to white caps, churned up by the violent spring storm. The waves picked the boat up at the rear and tossed it over on its back, Perry Graham later recalled. Disaster. Two of the survivors later credited Graham with having saved their lives that day. Incredibly, the boat never completely sank. In the moments after it was flipped over, Perry Graham and others actually managed to grab hold of one woman who had been knocked unconscious. They pulled her body up onto the top of the overturned hull, hoping to save her life in the midst of the storm. But moments later, another gust of wind battered the boat, and the woman's body slid off the hull and sank beneath the waves. Those who survived the initial incident took shelter from the storm in the small air pocket underneath the overturned boat, hanging on for their dear lives. When the storm finally passed, they managed to find life jackets and swam out from underneath the boat, where they were soon rescued. On May 29th, newspapers reported the tragedy across the region. Six drown as tornado upsets boat, the Blyville Courier News wrote. But a few days later, the Central Mo leader added two to the total. Two more victims of boat tragedy, newlyweds, the headline read. The paper reported the Fahys had told the owners of Lazy Days Resort that they would be in and out during their stay and not to worry about their absence. But a few days after the storm, the owners hadn't seen them, and they began to worry. They soon discovered the Fahys' car, parked near the Lockwood docks, with no one inside. Were Thomas and Dorothy aboard the Grand Glaze that day? No one knows. According to a later report in the Chicago Tribune, their families said that they had heard from the couple on the evening of the 28th. Thomas and Dorothy reportedly told them they intended to go see friends at the Lockwood dock the next day. Those friends planned on boarding the Grand Glaze, but Thomas and Dorothy had said they planned on skipping the excursion. The question was even disputed in court. Lockwood owners insisted the Fahy's car had not appeared at their business until days after the sinking. But others said it had been there on the 29th. Of course, there were no security cameras then to prove one way or the other. However, only 12 tickets were sold for the boat ride, according to Lockwood's records. The boat's logbook listed the name of every person on the boat, 11 adults, one child, the captain, no Thomas and Dorothy Fahy. Two passengers later said that when the boat capsized, amid the chaos and struggle in the water, they remember hearing a man's voice calling, "Dorothy, Dorothy." None of the registered passengers on Perry's logbook was named Dorothy. Five bodies were ultimately recovered. One confirmed passenger, a child, never was. And Thomas and Dorothy Fahy were never seen again. Divers plunged 100 feet into the lake's depths in search of those lost in the Grand Glaze tragedy. They encountered a labyrinth of trees and brush on the lake's floor with only inches of visibility, but never any sign of Thomas or Dorothy. To add to the weekend's tragedy, two others drowned in unrelated incidents. A 24-year-old St. Louis man who went to check his trot line was never seen again, and a search for his body was unsuccessful. And a 17-year-old from Iowa drowned while swimming with friends on the Niangua Arm. His body surfaced a week later. it remains the deadliest weekend in Lake of the Ozarks history. The boat, Grand Glaze, was astonishingly deemed fit for excursions again only weeks later. It was the busy tourist season, after all. When it launched, at the helm was none other than Captain Perry Graham. But it was soon clear that Graham had been shattered by the tragedy. He could scarcely operate the boat without flashbacks of that horrible, fateful day. Within just a few journeys, he hung up his captain's hat for good. He was just 18 years old. Grand Glaze operated without any other major incidents for a few more years before being put away, stored near the dam. The future belonged to bigger boats, like the Captain Larry Don that many are familiar with. The Grand Glaze's sister vessel, Tuscumbia, also strangely met with tragedy 4 years after the capsizing of the Grand Glaze, when the Tuscumbia ran over and killed a skier. That happened in the same area where the Grand Glaze's fateful journey had ended that day. Both boats were eventually decommissioned and stored near Bagnell Dam. Strangely, both were destroyed by fire in 1970. We arrived safely. That's what Thomas and Dorothy Fahey wrote in their postcards home. And yet, how suddenly everything changed. How many dreams were left unfinished. Plans thrown awry. A young couple here and then gone. Like a Missouri thunderstorm.